ahead of the morning show with Greg Berg. Let's check WGTD Sports and Weather. Major League Baseball, the Brewers beat the Cardinals 3-2. Cubbies beat the Pirates 13-5 at Wrigley last night. And the White Sox beat Tampa Bay 2-1. Brewers are off today. White Sox play the Twins in Minnesota tonight. The Cubs have an afternoon game against the Pirates at Wrigley. The NBA, last game of the regular season, the Bucks clobbered by Philadelphia 130-95. Nonetheless, they're on their way to the playoffs. The Bulls lost to Detroit Pistons 119-87. Quick reminder, there will be tornado drills throughout Wisconsin today. One will be at 1:45. One will be at 6:45. Sirens will sound. Those are statewide drills. 1:45 for the afternoon, 6:45 this evening. The forecast now from the National Weather Service, partly sunny, windy, and warm. But a high of 66, wind gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight then, cloudy, 60% chance of rain, a low of 40. And tomorrow, Friday, looks like a rainy day, cloudy and mild, 70% chance of rain. Tomorrow's high, 53. Right now, wind from the southwest at 15. Pretty nice morning overall, though. Sunny and 55 degrees in both Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. Coming up on 8:12, the morning show with Greg Berg next.
Support for The Morning Show comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. You can build a career as a licensed professional counselor and mental health and wellness advocate with the new master's degree in mental health and counseling from Parkside. Visit uwp.edu. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We haven't yet seen Nan Calvert this morning, but we do have the guest that she lined up for us for part one of today's program, Rick Fair, Education Chair for the Hoy Audubon Society, and we're going to be talking about birds for the first part of today's morning show. We are cutting the conversation just a little bit short to make room for political science professor Jerry Mast from Carthage College to offer his perspective on yesterday's announcement from Speaker Paul Ryan that he will not be seeking re-election and, at least for the time being, appears to be drawing his political career to a close. So we'll have a conversation about that a little bit later on in the hour. But first, a conversation about the beautiful birds around us and the beautiful beautiful work of bird watchers like Rick Fair. Rick Fair, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Well, thank you, Greg. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Good to have you here. I'm glad that we can talk because it has been, in some respects, kind of a strange spring and with little bursts of warmth, but a lot of lingering cold as well. It's like winter just does not want to loosen its grasp. Have you noticed anything particularly strange in terms of the birds that we are or are not seeing in this March and April? Or has it otherwise, as far as the birds are concerned, been a relatively normal spring?
Well, that's a good question, Greg. The birds have been a little bit slow coming in, but with the warm temperatures yesterday and this morning, a lot of the birds migrate at night. Hmm. So I expect that some of the early migrants will be arriving now. Some have arrived already. We've seen the robins, and the red-winged blackbirds are very numerous, sandhill cranes. But we still have some of the winter birds, the ones that come here for our pleasant winters from from Canada. They nest in Canada. They're still hanging around. So we still have some juncos and tree sparrows hanging around, but I suspect that they'll be leaving fairly soon.
Hmm. And is this, so are we seeing some of these birds sticking around longer than they normally would, or does it still feel like largely a normal spring in that respect?
Well, there's several kinds of migrants, and the ones that are short or medium distant migrants that spend the winter in North America, in the southern states, they usually rely on local weather patterns to start migrating. So when you get warm temperatures, they will start migrating. The sparrows have been a little bit slow coming in, so we should be seeing fox sparrows, and I've seen a number of song sparrows already. So they'll be migrating. But the main migrants, the ones that overwinter in South America, the neotropical ones, their migration is pretty reliable because they start getting active and getting ready to migrate when the length of the day starts to get shorter in the southern hemisphere. So they're not fooled. They don't know what local temperatures are here. So it's almost you can predict which ones are going to come in a little bit early, such as the Orioles. I would start putting out my oranges and grape jelly about the last week of April, but usually they're here by then or the first week of May. And then a lot of the warblers will be coming in. Right now, when the day length starts to get shorter, they start feeding and getting active, and the fat is building up in their body, and that's the fuel for their migration.
Hmm.
So they don't often get fooled because over many years of evolution, if they did come up too early, they're insect eaters, they would have a hard time surviving.
Hmm. It's interesting, by the way, one of the birds you mentioned coming down here for the pleasant winters of Wisconsin, you know, that makes us chuckle. But, of course, compared to the winters in Canada, and especially northern Canada, we do have pleasant winters. So it's just kind of interesting to think about a bird fleeing someplace else to be here for our winter.
Right,
but we have to keep our winter in perspective.
An interesting bird that will be migrating, and it has kind of a fictitious sounding name, is a yellow-bellied sapsucker. And this bird usually arrives when the sap is flowing in the trees. And what it does, it makes a series of holes in the tree, and the sap flows, and it loves to lap up the sap, and then insects get stuck in the sap. And and other birds and other animals could take advantage of this. And they say that the hummingbird often migrates along with the yellow-bellied sapsucker and takes advantage of these of the sap and the insects that are stuck in it.
Hmm.
So the only hummingbird that we get in the eastern part of the Wisconsin or eastern part of the United States is the ruby-throated hummingbird.
One of the things that I know you wanted to offer a couple of thoughts on is the whole notion of climate change. And, of course, we were talking earlier just about this particular spring and how it's been a little bit odd. But, of course, what's probably an even more important topic to think about in terms of birds is the potential effect of climate change on birds, on where they choose to live, on where they choose to migrate, and the patterns of that. What are the significant changes that we have seen, if any, thus far, related to climate change, as far as experts can tell?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a very interesting topic, and there's been a lot of studies being done on it right now. And it doesn't seem like much, but 1 degree Fahrenheit or centigrade increase in temperature could have a very, very detrimental effect on some birds. For instance, with the melting of the glaciers, we have higher sea levels, and there's a lot of birds that nest on beaches. One is a piping plover, and so if the water level gets too high, these birds won't have any place to nest on. Also, a lot of the sandpipers, the shorebirds, when they're migrating, and a lot of them are migrating up to the Arctic. The Arctic is shrinking also with the glaciers melting, so they might not have as much of a habitat to nest on. But also there's various staging areas that they use to fatten up to get to that to their final destination. One of them is Delaware Bay. One particular shorebird is a red knot, which relies on the horseshoe crabs that lay their eggs on the shores. So if there's no shoreline, these birds are going to have a hard time finding food and fattening up to get to their nesting areas.
So sometimes it's a loss of habitat, sometimes it's a loss of food, areas. And sometimes both.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting when you think about this, it's almost as though this is another example of the fabled canary in the mine shaft.
Oh, absolutely.
That for miners, a canary in a cage could be an indication that something is amiss in the air and serve as a warning. And in some respects, birds being a relatively sensitive kind of creature, like amphibians, that when we see problems among various bird populations, that can be one more warning sign for us that something is amiss with the planet in terms of climate.
And the thing is that birds are on the move, and we see them. Another thing is the timing of migration. For instance, the birds over years have timed their migration, and they're nesting to get the peak insect hatch. And so if the insects are hatching sooner, they might be out of sync when the birds really need all the insects to feed their young. And so this is another worry. And plants have it takes longer time for plants to make adjustments because they're not as mobile. So the plants that birds rely on might not be in the areas that the birds are going to be nesting in. And there is you asked before if there's any noticeable changes, and there are some. The cardinal is expanding its range further north. It used to be more of a southern bird. Now you're starting to see it in northern parts of Wisconsin. Another bird is a red-bellied woodpecker, which is expanding its ranges. And so these birds are either expanding their ranges, and some are arriving sooner than they used to arrive years before.
Right. And, of course, because our natural systems are all interconnected in so many ways, it can be worrisome because that kind of a shift that is, in a sense, inflicted on, for instance, birds can have a ripple effect upon other parts of the ecosystem, other creatures upon which maybe they depend or whatever. So it's something certainly about for which we should be concerned. In the midst of lots of different concerns related to birds, I know that you wanted to share a couple of gratifying success stories related to some of the projects with Hoy Audubon, and one of them has to do with the beautiful bluebird. Tell us about the bluebird project that has been underway and the success that has been experienced thus far.
Well, the bluebird, the eastern bluebird, is the one that we get in our part of the United States. It declined over a 50-year period by about 90% over a 50-year period, and there were various reasons, loss of habitat, some severe winters because they overwinter in the United States. But also we introduced the house sparrow and the starling, which competed with the bluebird. And the bluebird nests in cavities, usually old woodpecker holes in trees. And so there was so much competition, and then people were cutting down their trees, their old trees that had all the old woodpecker holes in them. And so the decline worried a lot of people. And so the North America and Bluebird Society started building and experimenting with bluebird boxes. And the State Bluebird Society started up in the 1980s and experimented with boxes, and the numbers started to come back. And Hoy Audubon got started about 11 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long already. And it's been a very gratifying project. The state produces over, there's been years, over 30,000 fledgling bluebirds in a year. Hmm. And with Hoy, we started with 60 boxes 11 years ago. We're up to about 300 and some boxes. And a lot of them are located on golf courses, cemeteries, parks. They need short grass trees for the habitat that they really enjoy. And we get a lot of people to be monitors, and nothing is more rewarding than checking the box and seeing these little chicks hatching out and watching them fledge out and leave the nest. So our biggest year with Hoy has been 950 bluebirds in 1 year, but normally we fledge out about 600 to 700 bluebirds every year on our boxes. But also there are other songbirds that we fledge out, tree swallows, black-capped chickadees, house wrens. So overall, it's been a very exciting project.
Yeah. What do you mean by that term, fledge out?
That means that they leave the nest. Hmm. So usually it takes about 14 days to hatch the eggs, and then another 17 days or 18 before they leave the nest.
And that's what we want to see, of course.
That's what we want to see, right.
Very good. Tell us also about the Peregrine Falcon project that also has been something of a success story.
So the Peregrine Falcon, like a lot of the other birds of prey, numbers were really going down. And in fact, it no longer existed in Wisconsin in the 1970s. Hmm. Because the main reason, besides habitat loss, was the use of DDT and other insecticides. And this was making their eggshells so thin, because they couldn't accumulate calcium on them, that when they were going to hatch out, when they were sitting on their eggs, they were cracking prematurely. So Silent Spring, the book Silent Spring, brought attention to a lot of people. And DDT was actually banned in Wisconsin in 1972. And a man that was working for the Milwaukee Museum at the time, Greg Septon, started this project where he bought about 14 fledgling peregrines from falconers, and he raised them. 10 of them survived. And then over the next 5 years, he brought in adult falcons from mostly falconers, and then he built these boxes and put them on tall buildings in Kenosha. The Pleasant Prairie power plant has a box. And so this story, and eliminating DDT, and with his help building these boxes, he has banded over 1,000 peregrine falcons over the years. And We Energies has been very instrumental in putting up boxes, and they have fledged out over 230 peregrine falcons.
Wow.
So if you go to some of these buildings, you can actually, it's exciting, usually the month of June when the young ones are leaving the nest, you can watch them make their first flights. Hmm. And they also have cameras on these, and there's a website. You can go to Peregrine Falcon and actually see them on their nests. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, they're such a beautiful bird, and you're saying they were completely gone. Wisconsin.
Luckily, they're a worldwide bird. Seen in every continent except the Antarctic.
Hmm. Such a beautiful bird. That's a great story. For those of you just joining us, Rick Fair is my guest for part one of today's morning show. A little bit later in the hour, we're going to be speaking with political science professor Jerry Mast about yesterday's dramatic announcement from Speaker Paul Ryan that he will not be seeking re-election. Rick, I know that you want to tell us about something called the Breeding Bird Atlas. What is that?
Okay, The Breeding Bird Atlas gives us an idea what birds are actually breeding in Wisconsin. The very first one was done 20 years ago, and they found out what birds are actually breeding, and we are conducting it every 20 years. Mm-hmm. So this is the fourth year of the second breeding bird survey. And it's all done by volunteers. So certain segments are given to people, and they go out and try to find any evidence of what birds are breeding in the area. Anybody can report whatever they're seeing. If they can, like a bird that is relatively new to our area, it has escaped from bird stores, is the European goldfinch. It was a beautiful bird. And it is breeding now in our area. So if you have any indications or that it is breeding in your area, you can contact, you can go to our website, hoyaudubon.org, and contact either Jenny Wenzel in Kenosha or Eric Howe in Racine and report any of your sightings to them.
And that's, of course, one of the exciting things about this whole notion of bird watching is this idea that, that ordinary citizens can really be an important part of this.
Absolutely. And that's all with like the Bluebird Projects. It's all volunteers. We also have like a great backyard bird count in February. That's all done by volunteers. There's just so many birds in so many areas that you can't have all professionals doing all this work. So we rely a lot on volunteers to help us out.
So I know that you have some upcoming events that you are anxious to talk with us about, including some specific bird walks that are a very important part of what Hoy Audubon does. Tell us about that.
Well, Greg, we're a very active group. We offer a lot of bird walks throughout the year. The month of May is when all the warblers are coming in and your orioles. Indigo buntings and all these other beautiful birds. So during the month of May, we offer bird walks 4 days a week at four different locations. So I would suggest that you go to our website, Hoy Audubon, to check them out. But to give you a brief summary of what they are, on Tuesdays, we have bird walks alternating between evening at 5:30 and mornings at 8 o'clock at the Cliffside Park, which is adjacent to the Eco Justice Center in Racine. And that's on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, we have evening walks at Colonial Park in Racine. On Thursdays, we have evening walks at Hawthorne Hollow Nature Center at 5:30. This starts the last week of April, the last Thursday, and the first three weeks of May, first three Thursdays of May. And on Fridays, we offer bird walks at 8 o'clock in the morning at River Bend Nature Center. And that starts last Friday of April and the first three Fridays of May. So we have a lot of walks. We recently had a walk, in fact, last night on the woodcock. Now, the woodcock is a member of the shorebird family, but it doesn't like to be near water. It's actually a very unique bird. It has its eyes in the back of its head, so it can actually see almost 360 degrees. It puts on a flight display right when it starts to get dark. It makes this sound, peent, peent, peent. And then the male takes flight and tries to attract a female. And so we were there last night at Cliffside Park. We counted about 20 different woodcock, and they'll do this for about an hour, and then they'll start feeding. They weigh about a half a pound. They eat about a half a pound of earthworms every day.
Wow.
So they are quite unique birds and very interesting to watch.
Yeah.
And you can go out to Bong or any open areas, Chiriwaukee Prairie, right before it gets dark and watch their flight. It's pretty amazing.
Cool. So these bird walks, typically how long do they last, and how organized are they? I mean, when one goes on one of these walks, what happens typically?
Well, we meet at a certain place, and we have bird leaders, members of our club, and we welcome people of all expertise. and they usually last a couple hours, and we'll take a walk through the various habitats of wherever we are. A lot of the places have a river flowing through them or some water involved, because a lot of the birds that are coming in, the warblers, are insect eaters. So insects are usually hatching out of the rivers, the Pike River or the Root River or streams, and it's usually a good place. And we take a slow walk. If you have binoculars, bring them. If you don't, we have extra pair that we can supply. And if you have children, all the better, to get them involved. And it's very informal. We have we're very a friendly group of people and leaders, and we try to point out all the different birds that we see.
Now, do bird walks for Hoy Audubon occur rain or shine? And if you have your bird walks even when it rains, does that typically make a difference in terms of what you are likely to see or how the birds behave?
Normally, if it's raining really hard, we will cancel. Sometimes we have a big email list, and we will send out a cancellation notice that way or through Facebook. We have a Facebook, Hoy Audubon Facebook group. Usually when it's raining, the birds are hunkered down, and it's not good to see them.
Like people.
But if it gets cold, sometimes when it's cold and not raining, the birds have to feed, and you sometimes can see these warblers, which often are very hard to see darting around in the leaves of the upper parts of the trees. You'll see them feeding on the ground, looking for insects that have been on the, you know, knocked down because of rain or something like that. But usually after a rain, it can be very good for the birds because they're not feeding during the rain, and afterwards can be really, really good for birding.
When you are on these walks, how important is it for the people on the walk to be quiet? I mean, is to a significant degree, does noise tend to scare birds away or make them, in a sense, more scarce? I mean, are these walks conducted in a sense, relatively quiet fashion?
Well, we encourage people to be as quiet as possible. Some birds are very skittish. For instance, ducks and wood ducks are very skittish. However, a lot of talking goes on. It can be a socializing event. Sometimes the birds aren't as cooperative as other times, and so there aren't as many birds to see. But we talk birds, and people just talk, and it's a friendly gathering. So we don't discourage people from talking, but we would rather have them be a little quieter. The birds are so intent on feeding that it's not going to really bother the majority of them.
Glad to hear it. I know that if one talks about birds, then one really has to talk about trees. They go, in a sense, hand in hand. And I want you to talk about something called the Trees We Love program. That sounds interesting.
Yes, this is a program associated with Hoy Audubon. This is the third year. We have what people do is they nominate trees that they think are either beautiful for that species or big for that species or that has some sentimental value for that species. And over the last 2 years, we have selected, last year we selected 6 trees. The year before, I believe 4 or 5 trees. Right now we have 9 nominations for trees, and there's a board that selects the trees. Depending how much money we have, we try to get some grants for this. But each tree is awarded a plaque and also a written historical study of that area and also a framed photo of that tree. So each tree is awarded close to about $500 worth of gratuities or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's really a wonderful program. It makes people aware. And, of course, native trees are very important for attracting insects, which is important for birds. And one interesting tree that's been nominating this year is on the Foxconn property.
Oh, boy.
And where they're widening the road. And we're trying to get them to preserve this tree. And right now there's been a lot of cooperation with the people that are widening the roads. And we're trying to get some of the politicians involved. And hopefully Foxconn will preserve this tree, even though the owners have to move.
Right.
Through this,
so possibly the tree will stay put. That's really, really interesting.
So that would be wonderful if they could preserve the tree.
Right. So what kind of a tree are we talking about in this particular instance, and why do you feel like it's worth preserving?
Well, it's a bur oak. Mm. It's a beautiful tree, and just for that fact that the current owners nominated the tree, we looked at it, and it is a beautiful tree. So hopefully they will preserve it.
And this is something that, among others, the Hoy Audubon Society is taking this on as a cause.
Right. This was the idea of one of our environmental chair. Her name is Sue Schuett, and she got this program going. She is the backbone of this whole project, and she's very passionate. She writes a beautiful, she has beautiful write-ups of the trees, and all the historical background is done by the Racine Historical Society.
Wow.
It's a wonderful program.
Absolutely, and it really gets you thinking about the trees among us and trees that we might see every day and yet not stop to really look at.
Right.
And, of course, it's the easiest thing in the world to just chop a tree down. But when one thinks about the long life of a tree and the way in which that tree has profound effect on insects and birds and other creatures, we have to think about the trees that we have around us, and we have to do a better job of preserving them.
Right. And it's a shame to see all these ash trees that have been cut down. Colonial Park is one of the parks we take our walks on, and one section, it looks like a tornado went through. It's just terrible what that disease has done to the ash trees.
Right. Is the ash tree something that where the demise of so many ash trees, has that had any sort of significant effect that you've seen on for instance, the bird population?
I think it's a little early to tell right now, but in this particular area, the majority of the trees were ash trees. So what's remaining is very few trees, the same as at Pritchard Park in Racine. Almost every tree was an ash tree, and there aren't many other trees left. So it should be, we'll find out this year when we take a walk through that area. I'm sure that there's not going to be quite as many insects, and so therefore we're not probably going to see as many birds in that particular area. Luckily, the other section that we walk on hasn't been cut down yet. I know they have to cut down the trees for safety reasons, but if they were in the middle of a wooded area, I think they should be preserved if they're not a safety hazard, because even when they're dead, they're going to still provide cavities for nesting birds, and woodpeckers can find insects a lot easier in dead trees than live ones.
Yeah, incredibly important. I think it's been a little bit since we've heard you describe the reason why you yourself became so interested in birds.
Well, I took a class in ornithology many years ago at UWM, and I really didn't get interested in birds after that. I thought the instructor was a little nerdy, and I kind of thought all birders were nerdy, but when I moved to Racine in the early 1980s, I lived near River Bend Nature Center, and I dug up my old binoculars and bird book that I had for the class, and I started going there, and I thought, geez, this is pretty neat, and I got involved a little bit more and more, and it became a little bit, became a hobby, and then it became a passion, and now it's pretty much takes up most of my time giving bird talks or leading bird walks, and but I love it. It's just it's such a wonderful occupation, so to say.
Well,
now that I'm retired, it's my occupation.
Right. Describe what it was like for you as a mailman, in terms of the way in which that, in a sense, fed this interest and became, in a sense, a big part of it.
Well, I was Greg's mailman at one time, one of my very first routes. You always have break times and lunch times, and if there was an area that I could take my break where I could see some birds, I would always do it. And so that being outdoors was a help.
Yeah. What would you say is this area like, that is southeastern Wisconsin, the Kenosha Racine area? Is this an especially sort of rich region for seeing birds and enjoying birds?
I really enjoy this area. If I had to pick one area in the state to live in, I probably would pick somewhere in Door County.
Hmm.
But
you mean as a bird watcher?
As a bird watcher, mm-hmm. Because you get more northern birds there. However, we're very lucky to have Lake Michigan at our doorstep, and Lake Michigan draws a lot of ducks in the winter, different gulls in the winter time, and if you look at a map of Racine, Racine sticks out quite a bit into Lake Michigan compared to Milwaukee, and so if a bird is flying over the lake, migrating, and it has to land somewhere, a lot of times Racine can be a good spot to land, and Kenosha also. So we're very fortunate to have Lake Michigan so close. And a really good spot in Kenosha is the dunes around where the off of 75th Street.
And oh, right.
All the way out to 85th. You can walk the trails at the dunes, and a lot of times it's really a good place for these migrants to land and fatten up after their flight. So it can be very, very good spot, Racine and Kenosha, for birding.
Tell us a little more about Hoy Audubon, how this organization is sort of put together. I know that it exists all across the country. How sort of tightly organized an organization is it?
Okay, Hoy Audubon is a local chapter of the National Audubon Society.
Right.
And in the state, there's about 15 chapters of the National Audubon Society. We were organized in the 70s. It was called the Hoy Bird Club. It wasn't affiliated at all with Audubon Society.
Hmm.
Then in the 70s, it got affiliated. Now, I take that back. I think it was the early 90s that it was affiliated with the National Audubon Society. And there are benefits to be affiliated with National Audubon because we have maybe three meetings a year with all the other chapters where we get together and talk about what you're doing for getting speakers and bird walks and things like that. We have monthly speakers and meetings. And in the winter months, we're at the Northside Library in Kenosha. In the summer months and the spring months, we're either at River Bend Nature Center or we're at the YMCA in Racine. We meet the first Thursday of every month, and we have a guest speaker usually. This past month, we had a talk on the monarch butterfly. Some upcoming talks we have. We're going to have a warbler talk this coming May meeting. Then we're going to have somebody from the International Crane Foundation give us a talk about the cranes of the world and the reintroduction of the whooping crane, that story where they follow the airplane to set up another population of whooping cranes. And then we're going to have we always have a picnic in July, and then we're going to have a hummingbird talk coming up soon. So we offer a lot of different talks on a lot of different topics.
And I imagine you as the education chair have a lot to do with making all of that happen. So,
well, we have an activities director, which is vacant now. So if anybody is interested in joining our club that likes to be a part of a board, we always welcome people. We want to get some new people involved.
And as before we went on the air, we started talking about something that had not really ever dawned on me until our chat kind of took us that direction, and that is the fact that there are a whole lot of reasons why it really makes sense for us to try to encourage young people to begin engaging in bird watching. And it's something we don't necessarily even associate with young people doing it, and yet there's a lot of things a lot of ways in which young people could really benefit from doing this.
Oh, absolutely. Just getting young people outdoors is exciting.
Away from screens.
And a lot of some of the nature areas, the Eco Justice Center and Riverbend Nature Center have a lot of activities for school groups. So that way it's a little organized. Hawthorne Hollow is going to be offering a lot of programs, even in the summertime, to get young people outdoors. One recently, I do a lot of volunteering at the different nature centers, and one was with the sugar mapling and showing children how to tap a tree to get the sap out and how they make maple syrup from the sap. And the kids really seem to enjoy being outdoors. And it's amazing how many of them have very seldom get outdoors. And it's really important that they do and appreciate nature. The Racine Zoo, the education chair there, has gotten a grant to form a Racine Nature Club. And this is, the idea here is to try to get families outdoors at various locations with very little structure, just getting them to go outside and play. And just being outside is the important thing behind this. And so they got a grant from the Disney Foundation and from some zoological foundation to set this program up, and this has just started this year.
Fun. You know, one of the things that occurs to me is that one of the best skills that actually most of us probably need to foster is the skill and gift of patience, and that it takes some patience. I mean, just like that's probably a good reason to go fishing. Another reason to go bird watching also is because in many respects it's a case of delayed pleasure, and sometimes you really have to exhibit patience and persistence and have a really watchful, observant eye. And it just seems like there aren't a whole lot of activities that maybe even foster some of those gifts as well as bird watching maybe does.
Well, you can always enjoy the woods and nature even if you don't see a lot of birds. But when you really get into birding, we have hotlines and ways of communicating if there's a rare bird for the area. I can give you an example. This is maybe, I was still working then, so I'm thinking this is maybe 15 years ago. There was a warbler that normally would not be in Wisconsin. It was a Townsend's warbler, and it was seen along the lakefront at Sheridan Park in South Milwaukee, I believe that is, or Cudahy. I went for it. I tried for it 4 days in a row before work. I missed it every time. A couple of times, they said it was here 15 minutes ago. So you hear that a lot. You just missed the bird. Finally, the fourth time, I was able to find it. And so talk about patience. Yes, you do need patience if you're looking for certain birds. But normally, if you're out for a walk, there are other things to enjoy. Just being outside and the smell of nature, the springtime, it's just wonderful.
Nothing like it. Nothing like it. And we're getting a nice taste of that today, as a matter of fact. So if people want more information about the local chapter of the Hoy Audubon Society, what should they do?
I would say go to our website, Hoy, Audubon.org. We have all our events, all our meetings, all our field trips. We have field trips to Horicon Marsh in August. We have field trips out to Wind Lake Sod Farms to look for a certain sandpiper that's migrating in the fall. We have a picnic coming up. We have a Christmas party in December. We have a lot of activities. So you can go to our website and find out, and feel free to join us. Our walks, we get a lot of people coming to these walks, and so they're very enjoyable.
So come join the fun. Mm-hmm. Rick Fair is education chair for the local Hoy Audubon Society. Rick, it's always great to talk with you about the beauty of birds and the fun of bird watching, and I appreciate you being part of the morning show today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Greg, and it's always a pleasure being on your program and giving me the opportunity.
You're welcome. The time is 8:47. Tomorrow on the morning show, a very special show. I'm looking forward to Brian Albrecht and his monthly visit to the program. Brian Albrecht, of course, is the president of Gateway Technical College. And with him for tomorrow's program will be two Gateway students who have each been elected as Gateway Star Ambassadors. This is a very special honor that's given to very special Gateway students who have an exciting and inspiring story to share about their own Gateway experience. And so these two young women will be with President Brian Albrecht on tomorrow's morning show. We have some other special morning shows coming up next week. One of them I want to mention is next Wednesday. Lisa Kornetsky, who is with the theater department at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, she's actually about to retire at the end of this school year. And so I'm looking forward very much to our conversation on Wednesday, when she will be talking about the latest production at Parkside, which she is directing. And that will be a bittersweet occasion as well, because I've enjoyed so much speaking with Lisa Kornetsky over the years. Next Thursday, Kate Jerome will be joining us. And, of course, she's the lawn and garden expert and the horticulture instructor here at Gateway Technical College.